From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Public opinion is deeply shaped by what we read, see, and hear. It is why the role of a free press is critical to a democracy. Only a well-informed electorate can best govern themselves. But given the skewed coverage of critically important stories in today's corporate-dominated media landscape, it's no wonder that our democracy is in deep trouble. Each year, the group Project Censored gathers together the most censored or undercovered stories of the past year and edits them into a book. And today, we'll learn what some of those stories were from the past year. My guest is Andy Lee Roth, Associate Director of Project Censored. He coordinates the project's validated independent news program. He's co-edited several editions of the Censored Yearbook, including this latest edition, Censored 2020. Welcome to the program, Andy.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
So for those who aren't familiar with the project, tell me a little bit more about Project Censored. How did it come about? And what is the process by which stories get gathered together into this yearly compendium?
So Carl Jensen established Project Censored at Sonoma State University in 1976 in response to students' questions about how Watergate failed to be covered as national news in the lead up to the 1972 presidential elections, which of course allowed Nixon to be reelected. And that was the impetus for what now has been a 40-some year running effort to track the news stories that independent journalists and independent news outlets are covering that the corporate media are, corporate news media are either marginalizing, distorting, or failing to cover whatsoever. So since the start, Project Censored has involved undergraduate students, first at Sonoma State University, and now at several dozen college and university campuses across the United States, in a collective networked effort to track and to better publicize these important but underreported independent news stories.
So let's talk about some of the stories that made it into Censored 2020. And I imagine the word censored is sort of loosely interpreted, because some of these stories do appear in the corporate media's coverage, but maybe are tucked in the back pages or lack the framework, or maybe just get one mention and then no follow-up. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So we at Project Censored, we talk about a 21st century definition of censorship that takes into account what Carl Jensen, the project's founder, called news inflation, the idea that we have more and more news, but it seems to be worth less and less. And so when we're tracking these underreported stories, a number of them are not in the kind of old-fashioned sense of the term censored. There hasn't been a government official saying you can't run that story, or a corporate entity squashing it. But interestingly enough, in this age of Facebook and Twitter and other social media giants deplatforming people, organizations, and issues, the old-fashioned notions of censorship are not entirely out of date, even here in the United States.
I want to pick up on one of the stories that your book that you've edited, Censored 2020, hones in on, and that is the treatment of immigrant children in custody. Now, the issue of immigrant children in custody became a huge one in 2018, not so huge in 2019, in spite of the fact that we now know that more children were separated from their families this year than the year before. The specific story that you capture in your book is the assault of children, the mistreatment of children, and in particular, sexual assaults of children in immigrant shelters, and how the investigations of these sexual assaults were so deeply flawed. Tell me a little bit about that story.
Yeah, so for each of these stories that we'll have a chance to talk about today, I want to begin by noting the news organizations, the independent news organizations that broke these stories, and also to take note of the student researchers who initially identified and vetted these stories for Project Censored. So in this case, this is reporting from ProPublica and Axios on flawed investigations of sexual assaults in these children's immigrant shelters. And the students who researched this are from Sonoma State University, Austin Barcas, Maria Granados, Angel Palominos, and Karina Ramirez. So ProPublica conducted a 6-month investigation of these detention centers that are specifically housing immigrants who are minors, who are underage. And what they found, based on literally hundreds of police reports, police documents, was what they describe in the report as a largely hidden side of these shelters, that again and again, the residents, these children are being preyed on either by staff at these shelters or fellow residents. And so that's the first injustice, that these sexual assaults are taking place in these detention centers. But the second injustice that is really the focus of ProPublica's report is that again and again, when there were allegations of sexual assault, these cases were closed, sometimes in a matter of days, sometimes shockingly in a matter of hours. And so the ProPublica reports what it describes as startling lapses in local and state authorities' investigations of these alleged sexual assaults. The follow-up report on that, if I could just add quickly, yeah. The follow-up report by Axios in February of this year, in some sense, corroborates what the ProPublica report found. Axios reported, based on leaked Department of Human and Health Services documents that were made available to Axios by Ted Deutsch, the congressman from Florida. Those documents showed that from October of 2014 through July of 2018, the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Refugee Resettlement had more than 4,500 complaints. So again, just to be very clear, these are complaints of unaccompanied minors in U.S. government custody who have allegedly been sexually assaulted. Of those 4,500 complaints, just over 1,300 of them, less than a third, in other words, were referred along to the Department of Justice for further investigation. So as I say, this is a story that has not been well covered in the corporate press. That's one reason it's in our top 25 list in Censored 2020 through the Looking Glass. There was reporting of this story in CBS News, and the New York Times also covered this story. But in both cases, in the CBS case, the story was driven by ProPublica's own reporting, ProPublica's own investigative reporting. And in the case of the New York Times, the story was hooked on and driven by the Axios report, the human health and human services documents. So I think this is an important story in its own right. It's a story of a double injustice, right? The sexual assaults in the first place, and then the lack of any sort of adequate investigation and follow-up on them. But this is also a kind of an exemplary story of what Project Censored is doing. Right. We did find there has been some corporate news coverage of this story. However, that corporate news coverage was driven by the original investigative reporting conducted by these independent news outlets. So this is also a useful story in terms of making the case for the importance of truly independent journalistic endeavors as an alternative to the corporate version of the news that is so predominant otherwise.
Right, and investigative reporting is a very expensive. You basically have to pay a team of reporters full-time for days, weeks, sometimes months to chase every angle of a story and dig deep and put it all together. It's and these are stories that have such an impact or can have such an impact. Often we find that investigative reporting can change policies, sometimes in some countries has been known to change governments. Let's talk about another story, which is that women in the United States are being prosecuted for having miscarriages. Now, some might, when such instances have taken place in Latin American countries, it has made big news in the corporate media. But when very similar cases have played out in the U.S., it hasn't made as much noise. Can you tell me a little bit about this story? Very disturbing story, women being prosecuted for having miscarriages.
Yes, miscarriages and stillbirths. So this is Naomi Randolph reporting for Ms. Magazine, and the student who researched and vetted this story for Project Censored is Abby Erler, a student at North Central College outside of Chicago. As Naomi Randolph and other independent news outlets have reported, in states across the country, legislators are enacting laws that effectively criminalize women for miscarriages and stillbirths. So we can look across from Alabama, where in the case of Alabama, it was actually the state's voters enacted a measure that endows fetuses with personhood, meaning that anything that the mother does that impacts the fetus negatively could be deemed criminal behavior that would be subject to prosecution. In Arkansas, a woman named Ann Minum was convicted of, quote, concealing a birth in 2015 after she gave birth to a stillborn child at home. That led to her conviction. And in Mississippi, a case that maybe did get a little more attention, Rennie Gibbs, who was 16 years old at the time that she gave birth to a stillborn child, faced murder and manslaughter charges. The jury in her case found that because she had used drugs, she had, quote, willfully and feloniously engaged in actions that led to the death of her child. This was despite the fact that experts in that trial had testified based on evidence that the drugs were not the cause of the child's death. So in states across the country, we're finding what Lynn Paltrow, who is the director of the National Advocates for Pregnant Women, has described as a unique gender-based form of crime, right? These are forms of crime that require a pregnancy to define them. And I think the other important thing about this story to note is these forces intersect with other aspects of other forms of inequality, so that the impacts are multiplied for women who are low income or women of color, who have, of course, less ready access to birth control and other forms of health care, and who also have fewer resources to avoid incarceration when they're charged with these crimes.
Now, Andy, the New York Times did cover in a pretty lengthy piece the incarceration of, or the prosecution, I should say, of women who are pregnant. But do you feel that there was enough follow-up work, or that maybe it was more the exception than the rule that other corporate media outlets didn't cover the story?
Yeah, well, the New York Times deserves credit for the piece which it ran in December of 2018 called A Woman's Rights. That was run as the cover story of the New York Times Magazine, one of the Sundays in December 2018. But that is the only true in-depth coverage that we found when we looked at this topic. So it's fairly startling to see almost nothing at all on this. Even if what there is fairly good. But the other thing that's interesting is that the New York Times chose to run that as a story in the magazine section of the Sunday paper, rather than as front page above the fold headline news.
Right.
So there's coverage, but again, the location of the coverage also, in effect, kind of encodes a value to the story or a status to the story.
Right.
So this was truly a detailed and in-depth report, but it was the only one we found when we looked, and when we investigate these, it's a year-long process that each of these stories is vetted for the quality of reporting, the reliability of the sources, and then the what, if any, corporate news coverage. So after a year of multiple stages of review, the only real corporate news coverage we found on this topic was from that one New York Times Magazine article.
So, Andy, so many more stories to talk about. We're just picking out a few of them. One that you had a direct hand in is Chapter 7 of Censored 2020, Stonewalled, Establishment Media Silence on the Trump Administration's Crusade Against LGBTQ People. We've talked about immigrant children. We've talked about women. Let's talk about how LGBTQ people and what they have suffered over this past year has not gotten enough coverage in the corporate mainstream media.
Yeah, so this is another chapter in the book that's a report on a full-fledged research project that April Anderson, a longtime Project Censored contributor, and I undertook during the past year.
So is this an example of a story where there is no coverage and so you have to do a ground-up reporting on?
Well, there is coverage of LGBT issues in the corporate news media, but what April and I found when we looked at, when we did an exhaustive content analysis of 2 years of news coverage between January 2016, in the run-up to the presidential elections of 2016 through November 2018, the midterm congressional elections, what we found was that the corporate media were covering LGBT issues. But there were basically two stories that they covered again and again. There was extensive corporate news coverage of President Trump's proposed ban on transgender people from serving in the military. That received a significant amount of corporate news coverage. We also found significant news coverage, and I want to say a bit more about this to unpack this term. We also found significant news coverage of so-called bathroom bills. Local and state efforts to rescind these, what often get referred to in the corporate press as bathroom bills. Now, it's worth saying a little bit about that terminology there. Bathroom bills is a term that was kind of pioneered and continues to be used by people on the far right to incite fear and panic and ultimately opposition to non-discrimination laws that protect transgender people. So really what we're talking about is with the corporate news media coverage of LGBT issues, as April Anderson and I tracked in our study, was coverage of a very narrow range of issues. We found a much more broad range of topics and perspectives covered in the independent media. And then when there is coverage, we also found, as exemplified by this language of bathroom bills, for instance, that the coverage itself has a slant, has an angle that is basically invisible unless you look comparatively at other independent news outlets to see how they're covering either similar issues or covering a range of issues that the corporate media simply are marginalizing or ignoring.
I want to turn to a story that I felt has gotten really no corporate media coverage at all. It was a story we covered on our show, and that was a documentary produced by the news outlet Al Jazeera, which rather than being a corporate-sponsored media outlet is a monarchy-sponsored media outlet or government-sponsored media outlet. They produced this documentary called The Lobby, about the Israeli lobby. And that film was unfortunately successfully suppressed here in the United States. And that film was leaked and released online and is damning to Israel and U.S.-Israeli relations and got, like, as far as I could tell, no real substantial corporate media coverage in at all. And this is very much emblematic of the way in which the mainstream media covers Israel. There's a handful of issues that the U.S. corporate media is absolutely terrible on routinely, and Israel is one of them. Tell me about the censorship of the film The Lobby.
Yeah, so this is a story that was broken by Asa Winstanley and Ali Abu Nima with the Electronic Intifada, and there was subsequent high-quality coverage of this story by the Real News Network and Mint Press News. The student who identified and vetted this story for Project Censored is Gabriel Kreide of Drew University in New Jersey. So as I see it, there are really three components to this story. There's the actual contents of the Al Jazeera documentary. There is the Qatari government's decision to not release the documentary. And then to really understand this, you have to also look at the motivations for that censorship. So we can begin to maybe just break this down, each of those three components succinctly here. As you say, Sonali, the documentary was a damning expose of Israel's covert influence campaign in the US. I think it was especially damning in terms of efforts to discredit the BDS movement, the boycott, divest, and sanction movement. Al Jazeera had an undercover reporter who interned with the Israel Project, which is a Washington, D.C.-based group, and the documentary contains footage of things like Israeli embassy officials talking about the use of fake Facebook accounts to infiltrate campus student groups, the coordination of US-based organizations with Israel's Ministry of Strategic Affairs, and a group of students who were fellows with the Hoover Institute talking about how they had engaged in astroturfing as a part of a pro-Israel gathering.
And right? I just wonder, had a documentary like this been released about a regime that the U.S. considers not friendly, you know, something like, you know, Venezuela or Cuba, it would have been front page news. It would have been feted. It would have been lauded. It would have been, you know, seen as evidence of the dirty deeds of this regime. But because we're talking about Israel, it got swept under the rug. Andy, unfortunately, we're out of time, but where can people find out more about the work that Project Censored does and get a copy of this latest edition of the collection of stories we've been talking about?
You can go to Project Censored's website, which is projectcensored.org, where we have a complete archive of not only this year's top 25 of underreported stories, but every year of the top 25, going all the way back to the project's founding in 1976. And of course, we always encourage people to ask for a copy of the book at your favorite local independent bookstore. So look for it on the shelves at your local independent bookstore.
Thank you so much, Andy. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali.
Andy Lee Roth is the Associate Director of Project Censored. He coordinates the project's validated independent news program. He's co-edited several editions of the Censored Yearbook. We've been discussing the latest one that he's edited, Censored 2020. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.